Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Separate the men from the boys with Tommy John's hammock pouch underwear. Right now, 20% off site-wide, TommyJohn.com/herd. See their site for details. I was given out grades yesterday on free agency, and Tampa Bay gets the highest grade because they brought the key players back, key players being Chris Godwin, Lavonte David, Shaq Barrett. Leonard Fournette right now and Antonio Brown, we don't know, but the reality is Lavonte David has been the voice, the team captain for years and years, and he is now joining us live from Florida. Just signed a 2-year deal, contract extension, a lot of money. You know, was there ever a moment that, because obviously if you'd have gone to market, somebody would have grabbed you up. You're a great player. Was there a moment you were concerned that you wouldn't come back to Tampa?
I don't think concerned, but it was just, you know, me and my agent just talking about other things that could possibly happen. But at the end of the day, I knew in my heart that, you know, we was going to get something worked out, because throughout the whole process, it was good transparency, you know, good back and forth conversations, communicating between both parties. So, you know, all in all, you know, I want to be back. You know, I built a lot of relationships in Tampa, man. And, you know, I definitely don't want to play nowhere else. So I'm happy that we got everything situated and we was able to get this thing moving forward.
So I think it's something's really important that you're not just a good football player, but you've been the captain. So that tells me that the organization trusts you. They see you as a leader. You're not just a great player. And I think, do you believe that part of them wanting you back is not just you make a lot of tackles, but you're seen as a communicator and a team guy, and that being a good guy and dependable is also a huge part of wanting you on the team?
Yeah, that's real big. And, you know, I can say that played a major part in it, not only for them, but for myself. You know, I built a relationship with a lot of those guys on that team. And it's a lot of young guys on that team who, you know, kind of look at me for advice. So I definitely want to be around them and continue to see those guys grow. And, man, you know, I just showed the respect that the organization has for me and the respect of my peers. So I'm definitely try to be that guy, try to be that leader, try to be that extra ear those guys need to talk to and things like that across the locker room. And I feel like I took on that role really well, man. And it's something that just don't happen overnight, you know, just something that I had to really work on and really just try to understand my teammates to help us, you know, get to where we need to be.
You know, it's interesting. It wasn't easy last year. There was that ugly loss in Chicago. I mean, you look back at the schedule, and there were some moments, Lavonte, that were ugly, that loss to the Saints. And when was the moment for you? The defense was always talented, but you had a very young secondary. You had a rookie safety. You had some different players. Was there a moment in the season for you that you kind of felt like, you know what, it's all kind of coming together?
That moment would probably be when everything started to come together. Was probably say after the bye week and during the bye week. You know, a lot of guys got together, we communicated, we talked, and we kind of just went over a lot of different things that, you know, kind of hurt us, you know, in the early part of the season. You know, we had our bye week late in the season, so that kind of helped guys get back healthy and to help guys, you know, really like focus and get their mind right for this stretch that we were about to have. And I think it really hit right then and there. You know, we sat down, you know, we had a goal in mind, and we was able to reach that goal. We wanted to win out, go into the playoffs strong, and then and go from there.
You know, Patrick Mahomes did not score a touchdown. That may never happen in the rest of his career. When you were going through that 2 weeks of film preparation and you're looking at Kansas City's offense, I mean, you probably were confident, but did you ever think, we're going to really make this a nightmare for Mahomes? Were you more successful than you may have even imagined?
I feel like we knew it was going to be a battle. We knew it was going to be a tough football game. But us, you know, defensively, I know mentally it was like every time we out there, we're going to put our best foot forward and we're going to try to dominate the best way we can. And you know, kind of in the show of that game, you know, I think our preparation that week was a little more than what we ever prepared for, obviously, because of the Super Bowl And, you know, our attention to detail was really on point. And, you know, guys were just out there communicating, and guys was doing what they were supposed to do. And that's what it took, everybody to do their job. And for us to be successful, we need everybody on the same page, and we was able to do that. So we executed our game plan, and, you know, we was able to hold one of the, you know, the one of the best offensive scoring football teams to, you know, no touchdowns. So you got to take your hat off to Coach Bowles and those and the staff for what they put together. And then also it comes down to us going out there and execute it.
You know, it's NFL, you've stayed pretty healthy. I mean, you're one of these guys that you get 1,000 tackles, 100-plus tackles for loss, 20 sacks since you entered the league. You got to play a lot of snaps to do that. When you look at Brady's age, are you a little surprised at 43 that he doesn't play old? I mean, you look at him, think of yourself at 43.
Yeah.
I mean, are there times you're like, I don't know how he does it, but he. I mean, are you surprised he's still playing?
I mean, at first I was, when he wasn't on my team, I was surprised, like, how he doing it, like, what is he doing, what is his regimen, how he's taking care of himself, and then actually being around him and see how he take care of his body, how he, you know, he prepare himself, you know, throughout the week, and how he take care of himself. You can see why he's still playing at this high level, and you know, that type of stuff don't happen often, but. For a guy like him to go in and, you know, go in week after week and just play at a high level at the age that he is, you know, he has to be doing something right off the field and taking care of himself. So, you know, I'm sure somebody want to play to where he's at right now. I'm sure they're going to have to hit him up and ask him some questions about it.
So the NFL drafts in about 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
I want you to go back to your rookie year. If you could talk to young players and say, okay, let me give you one piece of advice going from college to the pros. If you were talking to yourself, you know, all these years, 10 years later, what would be the advice you would give college guys going to the pros?
My advice would be, man, you just got to be prepared physically. You know, the mental, I feel like the mental is going to take care of itself when you're there as a rookie. You know, most times rookies come in, you know, just go out there and just play football. Play football the best way you can. But physically, you got to be able to take care of your body, man, because this is a beating throughout the whole year. You know, lucky for me, I had some vets who could help me from time to time and help me keep my body going for a long season. But, you know, for the rookies that's coming out, man, you just got to be able to take care of your body, you know, eat what you're supposed to eat, you know, and put that bad stuff in your body, get massages, you know, daily, man, get some rest. Main thing, get some sleep, man, and, you know, have fun whenever the season's over. But, you know, get some sleep, go to sleep at the right time, and everything else to take care of itself. I think that was the, you know, my main issue. I was just, you know, a young kid, you know, just out there not getting enough sleep, going to bed 12-1, you know, and then waking up, got to get up at 6 o'clock thinking I could go, but, man, it catches up to you. So it's going to be it's a long year. But, you know, I feel like getting some rest and, you know, taking some, you know, wear and tear off your legs throughout the season is really will help you out.
By the way, he has Levante Legend. It's a foundation that works to assist college-bound students who are succeeding academically but are financially challenged. I don't know your background financially. You've obviously done incredibly well for yourself, but you really put stuff back in. I love guys like you that are defensive captains. You give back to the community. You went to Northwest High School in Miami, and you live in Miami now. And you help kids on a regular basis, I take it.
Yes.
High school kids right now in your life, you put your arms around them and help them a little bit?
Yeah, from time to time, kids who I can reach, kids who I can get in contact with. You know, it's kind of hard right now with COVID and everything still going on. So, you know, whenever I can, whatever I can, you know, kids kind of like reach out to me via social media and stuff like that. So whenever they reach out and whenever I could get a chance to touch them, I, you know, kind of spit a little knowledge, you know, just try to, you know, give them a little game.
Levante, you're a class guy. Wish you the best. Congratulations on the new contract. You've earned every single penny of it, and thanks again.
No problem. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me, Cole.
You bet. Great football player. I love that. Seven-year captain. 7 years. Calls the plays. That's why when Cleveland went out and got John Johnson, like, he was the Rams, he's calling all the secondary plays. Like, that to me is so important. That's the guy the coaches are like, you run that unit. Those guys, and when you go into contract negotiations, those are the guys I keep. the talkers, the communicators, the lubricators. There's a lot of talent out there. Not a lot of guys in the football locker room. You're going to say, 7 years, you call all the plays. Those guys are invaluable. There may be 10 guys, 15 guys in the whole damn draft in the first three rounds you could give that responsibility to.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Marion, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Marion. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Marion on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcast.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Dee Ford is very valuable, and the 49ers restructured his contract this offseason, so he will now cost San Francisco $8.9 million in 2021 with $4 million guaranteed. That move freed up $11.2 million in cap space, so now the team is projected to have around $20 million in cap space for 2021. Now, that final cap number doesn't include the most recent signings of safeties Tart and Wilson, so that will go down a little bit, but they do have a lot more space, and they have a lot of free agency moves that they've already done.
By the way, they could save even more money if they acquired Sam Darnold and moved Jimmy Garoppolo.
I don't know. I think I don't see them moving forward with Jimmy Garoppolo after this season.
Oh, there's no way they're going to do that.
So, you know, it's kind of for different reasons, obviously, but it's kind of similar to what the Steelers are doing, where it's like, okay, this is a one more year thing.
Yeah.
But what are you doing actively in this season to prepare for when that's no longer the case? Now, obviously, Ben Roethlisberger's way further down in his career, and it's a different situation. But, I mean, we've seen what Jimmy Garoppolo is capable of and not capable of in his injury history. So are they going to bring in a Sam Darnold? Are they going to draft somebody? Because if you move off of Jimmy Garoppolo next year, what's your plan?
It's really interesting. New England and San Francisco, they're run by very smart people. There is a bad draft class next year. So to me, the Niners and Patriots have got to get up, and they both should take quarterbacks. And I just think the advantage San Francisco has is Miami and the Jets would be willing to do them a solid to move up. They're not doing New England a solid. So my guess is San Francisco is going to have a much easier time moving up in the draft than a New England would, not to mention New England beat Atlanta. So it's not like Atlanta's looking to do Belichick any favors either.
I don't know, outside of Houston, team is interested
that's
in doing
it. Yeah, that's
any
the
favors
one.
For the Patriots. But the Patriots were very active in free agency this year, and many of their newest additions noted that Bill Belichick was a big reason why they chose the team. Hunter Henry said his trust in Belichick and what they're building in New England was a big part of his free agency decision. Safety Jalen Mills also said being coached by Belichick was a huge factor, and defensive lineman Henry Anderson said he's really excited to be coached by one of the best defensive minds in the league. So Belichick still has a little bit of clout around the NFL.
Little clout. Yeah, just Matt Stafford said they don't have any receivers. I'm going to pass. Also, let's be honest. If you look at the Rams skill people and the Patriots, that's a real gap.
Well, I think Matt Stafford went to an excellent situation for him.
Yeah.
But I also think that the New England situation with Matthew Stafford, I think the Tom Brady Musk still lurking in the halls
sure.
played a major role in him not wanting to go there.
Totally get it.
Because obviously Bill Belichick is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, coaches in NFL history. And just as we just heard, there's many players who still hold him in very high regard, despite the idea that New England is a very tough place to play, which I'm sure it is. I think Belichick and Cam has talked about this too. I think Belichick in some ways is kind of misunderstood because he's a little grumpy, and you know, they have a very serious way about them in New England, and some people want to have a little more fun and be a little more loose and
yeah.
you know, ride around in boats in the intercoastal and
right.
throw the Lombardi trophy from boat to boat. So there's something different style for everybody. But I think that the Matthew Stafford thing was more about not wanting to follow up Tom Brady, because Cam does still feel like a temporary situation
in
New England. So here's a kind of a weird story. Mike Tyson reportedly turned down $25 million to fight in Vander Holyfield in a fight this May in Miami. The two sides have been negotiating a potential fight following Tyson's exhibition fight with Roy Jones Jr.
last
year.
Which was a total letdown.
That fight?
Well, I mean, I watched it and felt worse about myself, but they never really... I mean, it was, I felt, they never, it was not a real fight. It was like a...
Well, clear, it kind of felt like...
They told them to not hurt each other.
Yeah, like, don't make this too bad. But Holyfield's manager released a statement saying, "We thought this was a done deal, but it quickly fell apart when Tyson's people declined all offers. Wow. We were negotiating in good faith all along, and it appears we ended up just wasting our time." I mean, Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. were guaranteed $1 million each for their exhibition fights, and they were also supposed to get an equal share of the pay-per-view money. So $25 million is a big jump from a $1 million exhibition fight, but maybe Mike Tyson's like, it's not worth it.
Well, he's got, I mean, Mike's made a lot of money. I don't know his financial state, but I just thought the Roy Jones Jr. Tyson thing, after I bought it, 5 minutes in, I'm like, oh, this is just stealing my money.
I enjoyed that evening.
Well, it was a spectacle, so I did not turn it off,
yes.
But it was obvious the rules were don't hit in the face.
Yes, and the ring was very small. Like it was not what we're used to seeing, especially someone like Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. or we would be seeing with Holyfield. But it's just, it seems a bit odd knowing the numbers. Like $25 million is a lot of money, no matter how much money you've made. So, but it's different when you're making $25 million stepping into a ring with Evander Holyfield. So,
I joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Ethan Strauss wrote the book about the last couple of years with the Golden State Warriors, Victory Machine, the Making and Unmaking of the Warriors Dynasty. And we thought on a day where Steve Kerr was frustrated and visibly and verbally angry that somebody took his podcast and pointed out that Kerr actually said, "The KD team was harder to deal with and less fun than last year's losing team." I don't know why Kerr's getting all worked up. He got dumped by KD. We all knew it was turbulent. It's not like a new story. But Ethan Strauss will update us on this. I'm interested.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman. And I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, the Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Second government person in 2 days that has come out and shared their thoughts on aliens and UFOs. Yeah, you notice that Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida today, was stopped. Said he is worried about UFOs flying near United States military bases. He said, quote, "There's stuff flying over our military installations, and nobody knows what it is, and it isn't ours."
Yes, we do.
What?
I mean, they're finally coming. They see we're vulnerable. We're fighting with each other.
We are very vulnerable. We're very vulnerable country right now.
Well, I mean, I guess they could be coming for the rest of the world too, but I guess they're just targeting
he
us.
He said, "We don't know what the stuff is. It's flying over the top of our installation. So let's find out. Maybe it's another country that would have, that'd be bad news too."
It'd be bad news if another country had
I just think it'd be very fascinating. I would watch TV that day. If they're just, we have breaking
if
news.
If the aliens finally come.
If the breaking news was, "Hey, aliens, they're here." Wouldn't that be a big news story? I would lead the
news. I
feel
like that would dominate the headlines.
I wouldn't even care about the stock market that day.
Spoiler alert, it'd probably be down.
He's an NBA writer and a great one for The Athletic. His name is Ethan Strauss, author of The Victory Machine, The Making and Unmaking of the Warriors Dynasty. And he joins us today live. So Steve Kerr got all worked up. Holy moly. Ethan, he got all worked up. And then I went and listened to the tape and the podcast, and he did say that he had more fun with a team. And I think to myself, the story isn't the podcast. The story is, why is Kerr getting so worked up over a seemingly harmless comment? So you tell me why.
That's what's fascinating now, isn't it? Right? Because Steve gets criticized a bunch of different ways. He's an NBA coach. I know him. I know Drew Schiller. This is what's going to happen. But what's interesting is that this is what provokes the response. This is what gets a guy called out by name. And it's about a player who's not on the team anymore. And I think it shows the Warriors do, you know, regardless of whatever Steve's issues are with aggregation or being misquoted, the Warriors have a certain sensitivity when it comes to Kevin Durant, that the NBA superstar is so powerful that even when he leaves, there's a sensitivity to placation. You saw it immediately when Kevin Durant left. Joe Lacob immediately said that he was going to retire his jersey, not even waiting for a moment, even though he did, as you say, dump them. So that's what's fascinating about the whole thing. It's that in the modern NBA, the superstar doesn't just have tremendous power over a franchise. He has tremendous power over a franchise after he leaves. That's crazy.
What was Kerr and Durant's relationship like?
Well, I think it started off very positive. There was a honeymoon period. The way it began was at that All-Star game in New York a half decade ago, when Steve had really molded the Warriors into something free and easy and fun. And Kevin Durant knocked on the door of the coach's room, and they were all drinking beers. And he said to them, "Oh, so this is what you're all about, huh?" And they said, Yeah. And that was the beginning. And it was loose and it was relaxed in the beginning along the for the Durant Warriors. They were all drinking beers in the locker room. I know Kevin Durant would chug a Coors and then belch, and then he would do his interviews, and he would thank God that he was in such a free and easy environment like he wasn't in button-down Oklahoma City. But eventually, the experience of the Warriors did not do for Kevin Durant what he wanted it to do emotionally, and towards the end, things got very heavy once he knew that he would never be satiated. And that, I think, began the breakup, and it manifested itself in these spats where he was taking shots at Kerr, where he was on the press podium stage saying that, "Oh, we're supposed to play with joy," and he was meaning it sarcastically as an obvious shot at Kerr. And they damn near won a championship through it all. I mean, they came close, if not for injuries, with them really at loggerheads, with Kerr and Durant almost going at each other in the media. They almost pulled it off, but for a few injuries. But man, it was a heavy season. It was rocky. And if you read my book, the drama was fantastic, but it was a lot to go through for the people involved.
Yeah, there you go. We appreciate that. The, you know, it's funny. I look at, if you said Steve Kerr, I'd say smart and intense. Kevin Durant, I'd say talented and sensitive. Klay Thompson, I'd say stoic. Steph Curry, I'd say joyful and leadership. Everybody can be kind of described, right? And when I do think of Kerr, I do think smart, but I do think intense. And I'm not blaming anybody, but is it that intensity? Because I always thought that Steph Curry kind of tried to play not peacemaker with Kerr and Draymond or Kerr, but is some of this that Steve Kerr is just highly intense? And Michael Jordan got after him. Is Kerr's intensity sometimes too much for people?
Yeah, you know, this is why I like talking with you, Colin, is that you really probe the personalities of the people involved and look deeper into it. Because I do think that there's an element of that, that what makes Steve ultimately successful in the NBA is that intensity. And I wish I could give you an origin story. I tried to write about it. I talked to everybody in his life, that where did this competitive streak come from? Why is he breaking clipboards apart? Why is he sick after losing? Because you talk to his teammates at Arizona, they said that he was just sick the next day. And it was just always in him. You know, his parents were intellectuals, professors.
Yeah.
They didn't get why Steve in Little League was throwing his glove and cursing when he came out. They didn't understand it. They never wanted him to do that. They didn't really think that highly of sports. But this has just always been in Steve Kerr, and it results, I think, sometimes in this fire that's expressed at his players where he's not going to back down, and that's why you have situations like him and Draymond, for instance, in Oklahoma City, screaming at each other and being separated in the locker room.
You know, Klay comes back next year. I guess you could say the championship window is closed. I mean, you cover this team daily. Does it need a reboot? Are they one player away? Well, if I said next 2 years, what are the Warriors going to look like? What would be your answer, Ethan?
I think they just have to hang around the game, kind of like the San Antonio Spurs did, where you have enough organizational intelligence and enough people know what they're doing, and you're not going to get to that 60-plus win level, maybe, right? You're never going to be the favorites, let alone, I mean, you're never going to be the prohibitive favorites, let alone the favorites. But you can get within striking distance, and I do think they have an opportunity to do that just in how Steph has played, how he looks, how shooters tend to age really well. Steve Nash, Reggie Miller, Ray Allen, they all aged well.
Yeah.
That extends the window. And there's a guy by the name of Jordan Poole, and I don't know if everybody, casual NBA fans, have been following what he's doing. He has broken out at age 21 as this scoring combo guard who has a lot of talent. He was terrible as a rookie, but he's been fantastic this season. And he's the guy to maybe spell Steph when he's on the bench. This out-of-nowhere Jordan Poole phenomenon might be the thing that allows them the bridge to get within striking distance.
By the way, circling back to KD, what is his legacy with the Warriors? How do you look at it?
He was part of the greatest team ever in terms of talent, maybe just the greatest team ever, and he wasn't all that happy with being a part of it in the end. It's this strange, almost Greek tragedy. It's Shakespeare. It's fascinating. You know, how did that happen? Why did that happen? How did a guy elevate a situation beyond what anybody could have ever thought it was and not love the process? So he's a paradox. It's hard to digest it, but in the end, we are drawn to that in the NBA for whatever reason. We want to watch The Last Dance. We don't want to watch necessarily and see people dwell on the beginning of the Bulls championship. We're interested in, why did these egos clash? Why did it break up? We don't talk about the beginning of Shaq and Kobe, do we? We talk about how, why couldn't Shaq and Kobe keep it going? Why was ultimate success as a tandem not enough? And I think that this is just part of the NBA and part of that legacy, where in the NFL, dynasties break up due to injury or age. In the NBA, dynasties break up due to egos. So it's all part of that grand tradition.
Ethan Strauss, you're such an interesting guy, The Athletic. Put that book up again. Let's sell you some more copies here. the victory machine. You're always thoughtful, and you've got a podcast called The House of Strauss. Love having you on late notice. Thank you so much.
Of course, anytime, Colin.
All right, Ethan Strauss. It is. We've talked about that before. Is that it's a star-driven league. So when it's a little, NBA's got a lot of tech to it. Like, you know, people who run tech companies. I couldn't tell you a single guy that runs an insurance company. I can tell you everybody that runs Google and Facebook. And the NBA is a little like tech in where it is star driven. And when it's everybody, as you've seen with men, is grabbing control. I mean, I watched the Lakers. Pat Riley wanted credit. Jerry West, Shaq, Kobe, and Phil. And it blows up. Where in the NFL, generally, it's a salary cap issue and guys get hurt. They just. But the NBA is different. It is. NBA is a lot also like international soccer. It is going to be combustible because of the power and relevance and celebrity of the stars. It's an exhausting. Michael Jordan quit twice. It was exhausting.
I think all of that plays a part in it, but I also think that the NBA is unique in that the positions are more fluid now. You're never going to have a running back in the NFL like, I need more kickoffs. Like, you play a role. You play a position. There's not a whole lot of flexibility in that. You might have a receiver who wants more catches or things like that, but there's really specific roles in the NFL. So everyone can contribute and know what their contribution is. Whereas in the NBA, am I the guy? Is he the star? Is it my team? Is it your team? Is it Steph's team? Is it Wade's team? Is it LeBron's team?
It's like, also a positionless league.
That's
now
what I mean. So the role and who is the star and who is the alpha can be a little flexible.
Good stuff. Black Rifle Coffee. Try it. Great coffee. Veteran-owned. Serving premium coffee to people who love America. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Code HERD. 20% off. See you tomorrow.